Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. We are exploring the question, how do I live my best life right now? I am your host, Kari Vantine.
Welcome to Wild and Awake, everyone. And today we have with us, so blessed to have, Austin Wells. Welcome, Austin.
Thank you, Kari. Aloha.
Aloha. Yes, thank you. I'm here in Hawaii, and actually Austin and I were just noticing my beautiful orchids behind me. So it's just one of the most beautiful places ever.
Transformative
being here. Austin, I'd like to start by sharing a little bit about your bio, and then we're going to jump right in because I know that today we have some amazing material to cover.
Okay.
Austin Wells is an author, spiritual medium, and soul gardener who mentors spiritually seeking individuals to cultivate their intuition, heal their hearts, and connect with the divine. She has presented for such organizations as Edgar Casey's ARE in Virginia Beach, the Sun Valley Wellness Festival, as well as the Afterlife Conference, for which she was a board member for 8 years. Austin will be teaching at the Omega Institute this coming summer, which I'm so excited about. Love the Omega Institute. And her book, Soul Conversations, A Medium Reveals How to Cultivate Your Intuition, Heal Your Heart, and Connect with the Divine, is the recipient of 2 COVR medals, as well as receiving the gold medal from the Nautilus Book Awards. And I actually have her book here because it's just a fantastic tool, and I've been really enjoying it. So I look forward to pulling that out in our conversation today. Austin developed her Divine Insight cards and the Divine Spark cards to assist anyone in connecting with their intuition, for developing mediums to expand their trust, as well as for grief counselors to inspire healing conversations with their clients. Austin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Kari, I am so, first of all, how could you not be excited about a summit that talks about being wild and awake at the same time? So like, I'm wild, I'm awake, I'm ready, let's do this thing.
yes, thank you for naming that. And the subtitle is, how do we live our best life right now? Mm. So this is the conversation we're holding today. And I'm thrilled to start this conversation with you right now in this context of the realms of consciousness that you hold. And as just a little aside for our listeners right now, one of the images that I play with, or I played with while I was putting together the summit, was there's an old story, I guess it would be a fable, about these wise men and an elephant. And all of the wise men, I'm going to call them wise people. Wise people have their hands on the elephant in a different part. And one of the wise people says, you know, this being is long and narrow. And another being says, oh, it's the largest as possible. Another says it's soft and delicate. And they're all touching different parts of the elephant. Mm-hmm. And the work that we're talking about today with consciousness is a lot like that. All of the speakers who are here on this event, people that I admire deeply and find inspiring, are touching different parts of, and sometimes the larger part, sometimes the, you know, big realm, smaller realm, and none of it's right or wrong, but it's different parts of awareness, consciousness, that whole vision. So I love this image of the elephant. And so with today, with Austin and I, as we begin in this, our conversation, we're really looking at this, what I believe is a really core rich part of the elephant and a piece that you have done incredible work in your book, but in your own personal work, in your work with your clients. So I'm going to dive us right in with this. This book is titled Soul Conversations. A medium reveals how to cultivate your intuition, heal your heart, connect with the divine. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to start. You use the word soul, as in soul conversations. What does this mean, soul?
What is the whole elephant?
Yeah.
Kari, that analogy of the elephant was just brilliant, because within it is this understanding that people can only comment from where they are in their journey. So someone that would be touching the trunk of the elephant would have a completely different experience than someone who might be at the back end of the boy, you know, kind of feeling the fullness. So I think when we're talking about the soul, we're talking about all of the aspects of our journey, but also how we are individualistic distillations of the divine. And therefore, every single person has this gift to give. If we're distracted by the circumstances of our life, it's hard to feel that uniqueness because it can feel like all life is a series of distractions and difficulties. So the human experience, I think, is a fantastic contrast to our spiritual being. Because the human experience, which is why I titled the book Soul Conversations, because I realized, you know, if I was going to call myself a soul gardener, I had to kind of know what the heck a soul was. So that's the reason for it, right?
You got to do the research there, right?
There was a couple of parts of the elephant I hadn't met yet. So I had to kind of expand my awareness to really become an observer, a witness, to understand like why is there duality within us?
I know one of the places we're going to go in our conversation today is actually a deeper dive into soul. What is soul? And you've brought some beautiful images with you. But before we go there, I'd like to, for people to know you a little more deeply. Mm-hmm. And so before you began on this journey quite young in terms of your awareness. Would you share a little bit about the young you? And what I'd love for our listeners to hear in this is not so much a conversation of someone who is really unique and different, but actually someone who is tapping in, right, to consciousness a little differently. And it's a subtle distinction. But my invitation as listeners is to stand there in your curiosity as we enjoy what Austin shares about her life.
Yeah, I agree. I was very fortunate in the fact that my first experience that really was groundbreaking was when I was 5. So I hadn't had experiences where I was told what to believe or I was introduced to a different faith system or belief system. At 5, I was still bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So I was, my mom was a model, and I was part of a fashion show in San Francisco. And I was shy by nature. And not only that, I was gifted with this ridiculous bridesmaid's dress with just an abundant amount of tulle. And tulle is the stuff that makes the dress really stand out like it's overly starched. So I couldn't see my feet. And one of my blessings always has been that I'm gravity sensitive. So I trip and I'm so not being able to see my feet was disconcerting considering I had to walk in front of people and worry about, you know, this mushroom that I was wearing. So I was anxious, but in my family system, and I love my mother for this, she wasn't a nurturing mother. She wasn't one that I could wake up in the middle of the night. So she taught me the independence of learning how to care give myself. So I had to figure out, like, how do I nurture myself right now? Because I'm honestly frightened and scared. So I sent out a prayer and all of a sudden my room changed. My walls in my room started undulating, almost like I was suddenly underwater. And so there with this kind of feeling like everything became kind of gelatinous, these beings of light entered my room. I could see through them. They gave me absolutely no fear at all. And there must have been probably, I guess, I don't know, 50 to 100. There were lots and lots and lots of people. I didn't know them, but this one woman came up to my side and she spoke to me with her heart. So there wasn't words, wasn't anything audible. It was just a feeling. And she said, "We're here to help." So all of a sudden my room became two different realities. And to my right was the runway of the next day. And she gifted me with the vision of being able to watch myself. So here I am as the human being, and all of a sudden I'm being gifted to be the observer of myself, which is the benefit of spirituality, by the way. So I was able to witness myself going up the stairs and not tripping, thank God. And then starting to walk down the runway and gain confidence. Then she had me shift to being the people in the audience to feel what they felt toward me.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And there was so much love. And they were so kind, you know, the feeling that they wanted, Tala was nervous. They could tell, you know, they could feel my humanity. And so there was this compassion. And then she had me be the energy of the whole room. And I realized far beyond the physical appearance of the humans, there was this angelic presence in all spaces, not occupied by something physical. So there was no way I could fail. With that realization, that vision shifted. And I was back in my room with less people, but still with this woman. She intuited to me and she said, "How you doing?" And I said, "I think I can do this." And then she just disappeared and I fell asleep. But the feeling, the experience was so palpable that it really left me with some compelling considerations. One, help is totally available. We just have to be able to be aware of how it presents itself, because it certainly wasn't what I was expecting it to. And prayer works, which is nice to know. And also that there really isn't, we don't really fail. We just make choices, and whatever transpires in our life can teach us. And if you can see it from that perspective, it's kind of a gentler experience than thinking it's all about succeeding and success and being the best. Which is a lot for 5 years old.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, all those different perspective shifts are ones that I play with in my work, but I didn't get there at five. Like, it took a lot of journey to get to a place where moving in and out of other people's potential awareness mm-hmm. was the way that I was growing my perspective. So I'm just like blown away at little you being gifted that experience.
Yeah. And even, you know, the shamanic perspective, the indigenous cultures and how they look at it, they're always shape shifting into what is around them. And it breeds an automatic compassion. But what's stunning about it is when people have relationships where, you know, oftentimes you'll have a relationship that's troubled and you don't know how to affect it in a positive way. Well, sometimes by either having a dialogue with that person in an imaginary location that is benign and safe and neutral, that's one way to shift it, but also shape shifting into them and having them talk to you and find out what their perspective is and feel how it feels to be them imparts a completely different invitation to be connected instead of disconnected, which is what I think a lot of us experience in it if we're just in the lane of being human.
I think a lot of us experience being human as being separate from each other.
Yeah.
And this is
what we are. If you buy into the visual.
And if you're just grabbing onto the trunk.
Yeah. We're in your stunning, gorgeous dress. And, you know, I'm here in my house and we're different beings. And then you compare shop and you do all that stuff. And it's such a sadness. So it's part of the, you know, it's part of the dualistic nature of the soul is that we have two different ways of looking at things.
And say more, we have two different ways of looking at things. I'm guessing disconnected and all connected.
Can I transition to slides?
Say that again.
Can I transition to slides?
Ah, yes. Let's transition to slides. Okay. This would be a good place. I have so many questions for you, but this is going to give us a good little background of where to go from.
I just always find that sometimes visuals are very, very helpful to be able to understand concepts. So what is the soul? This is the question that I had to ask myself. And I came to this. So when we are born, we are given this embryonic sac, which gives us the sustenance to be able to survive. It's kind of like our personal universe. And when people are doing energy work and they talk about your auric field, think of the embryonic sac, because it's essentially the same. It's just this beautiful, diaphanous, see-through bubble that is all you, all the history of your soul and everything contained in this sacred space that's divinely yours. So also notice that, you know, when we're in that state, we are divinely connected. There's a cord that connects us to a nurturing source. So that's also a spiritual principle to always remember, is we're always connected to things that nurture us, even if what we're connected to doesn't feel so nurturing. Just throw that in. So here is, you know, what I call the soul space. You can look at it as your electromagnetic field. You can see it as your auric field, however you wish. But as an energy being, this is the invisible landscape of the soul. It is that which we cannot see. It's a quantum of energy that's always in movement, always in play. So to think of things as static is really to forget the fact that we're energy by nature. So therefore, understanding that principle, we're always in dynamic motion. So this is kind of how the soul space moves. It not only has the energy coming, going down and coming up, it also has energy coming up and going down. So whether we are aware of it or not, we're in constant dialogue with everything around us. We just can't see it. So the chakras are the way that that energy kind of is brought into our physical system. And there's beautiful chakra system explanations from different cultures around the world. And that's a whole other discussion. But what we really want to get to is, what is this duality of the soul? So let's think of our human being as a finite self. So it's our human being. It is the physical body of ours in a material world. So even that concept alone says everything that's physical defines me. So I am, Kari is the host, I'm the guest, we're two different people, we've got different ideas. And so we begin kind of seeing things as distinct and separate. We have our physical senses, which allow us to perceive the physical world, our smell and taste and touch and all those groovy things. Then we have our ego, our personality, and our emotions. That's a very curated experience. That's just the part of the elephant that we're talking about, right? So our ego, our personality, our emotions only understand the degree to which we've explored the elephant. And if you can see the elephant now, such a great analogy, Kari. If you can see the elephant as like, you could say God, you could say infinite intelligence, you could say pure consciousness. So we'll only understand it to the degree that we understand our beliefs and our own take of the elephant. Therefore, we have a singular awareness because it's based on our own experiences. And the thing that's the most challenging about the finite self is we base everything on that which is material. Everything that is material dies. So when you're only in the single lane of being a human being, there's an awful lot of fear because we know that there's an ending to it. We don't know what it is. We can delude ourselves, but we eventually have to deal with the fact, and death is present. I mean, we're all very different from, you know, things that have transpired in our lives. So there's that kind of awareness. So as much as we have the finite self, thank God, we also have the infinite self. So let's compare and contrast the finite self with the infinite self. The finite self being the human being, the infinite self is our spiritual being. That's the part of us. So we have physical being, this beautiful mass that we all get to kind of exist in, this vessel. But then there's the energy of ourselves. That's also simultaneously in existence. We have our physical body. We have our energetic body. We have our physical senses. We have what I call our soul senses, which means in the way that we see and taste and touch and smell physical existence, we also have those exact same senses, but to perceive that which we cannot see. So mediums and intuitives aren't these special individuals. They're like you and I mean, both of us perceive things. We have knowings about things. We can perceive things that we cannot corroborally visually perceive. So that's a beautiful expression of how our soul can be in constant contact with the universe. And the way that the universe communicates to us is through those very means. It's an energy, as opposed to a physical world, it's an energetic universe. So notice the difference. physical world is what we understand, what we see, the planet we're on. Energetic universe, that's everything. That's that's the whole elephant. It's right there. Okay. Then you have, your ego, your personality, and your emotions. We need those things. But on the infinite self, you're a distillation of divine intelligence. Like, what? More or less, there's nobody like you. Nobody. You are a one-of-a-kind wonder. No one else like you. And as in our human being, we're always comparing ourselves to other people. It's the thing that kind of just grabs my heart so much, because you are God in your own way. And God is working with you in that way. And if God isn't a word that you're comfortable with, you know, find a word that supplants it. But like, that's how important you are. So when you are more prone to the darkness in your life, you're just working through stuff to find the light. But I promise you, there's a gorgeous reason why you're here on this planet. So then, whereas we have the single consciousness with the finite self, the infinite self has access to a collective consciousness. So it's an interrelational, you're constantly in conversation with the universe once you accept that part of yourself. That's where you get the instincts. That's where you get the thing. It's not mediums picking from someplace special. No, we're just reminding ourselves that, wow, I can get help if I ask for it. Just like the story I told you when I was 5 years old, that was the proof that there's access to a collective consciousness, and it's benevolent and it's loving and it's kind and it wants the best for you. It may be loving beyond. It's loving beyond anything that I think our human nature understands. And that part makes me happy, sad, because it's the best discovery you'll ever make. And then it's kind of makes you go, God, why can't people just take that on board and come from that space of place? Finally, the finite perspective is it's all about death. When you're in the infinite perspective, it just goes on. We may come back as a dandelion. We may come back as a cloud. I mean, who knows what the next journey is, or human being again, and maybe we'll get it right the next time. So with each one of these ideas comes different belief systems. So with the finite self, we believe we're immortal. We believe that we're an individual that separates us from other people. We believe that we control our life, which is, wow, is that not true? And as you get older, you'll be really much more aware of that principle as being false. But the problem is that it can also put us in victim consciousness, because essentially what it says to us is life happens to me. Again, if we're thinking of ourselves as an individual consciousness, that's the challenge, that's the problem. So if life happens to me, I'm constantly at odds with my own existence, because I'm expecting it to disappoint me. I'm expecting it. See why we need both parts of our soul. So I'm infinite part of our souls, whereas I'm immortal finite-wise, infinite, I am immortal. It's hard for us to wrap around our heads around immortality, because it means that there is the physical body transitions. This is what mediumship proves, is that the physical body transitions, but the soul continues. That's a constant conversation, because you're part of everything. You're just in this life right now, expressing yourself as you are. Whereas I'm an individual, I am that I am, meaning I'm part of everything. I'm like, I am the elephant. I'm the hands on the elephant. I'm the ground that the elephant's standing on. I'm the whole kit and caboodle. I control my life, as opposed to I co-create my life. Because with that awareness, you're always in this dialogue with the universe. So you're the being through which your life goes forward. But once you step into different lines of service in the world, when you find that purpose in your life, then the spirit world, the universe, can you use you as the conduit for their healing that they want to manifest on the earth. And that's where real healing begins. That's where world peace comes from, is when we make peace with ourselves. So we can just make the place heaven on earth, which it is. We've just forgotten it. And then the final principle is life happens to me, which is just, such a limiting belief. but life happens for me. So with that singular idea, suddenly, no matter what happens, you know, your car doesn't start. I had a window blow out of my house. I'm like, cool. I wonder who I'm going to meet getting this fixed. You know, it just becomes more of a benign experience because everything is an invitation to learn or to teach. And that equal exchange happens with every single person you run into. So with the hope is that our finite self and our infinite self can merge together so we can live not with one dominating and another, but with a blending. Might remind you of the yin-yang symbol. And I love this one because it kind of shows how this is the truth of us. Like we're always in this kind of like groovy lava lamp thing that's going on. So then the hope of everything is to see the mind not as filled with these beliefs or only dictated by the finite self. So it's not just our beliefs and I got hurt yesterday and all that stuff. If our mind, think of the mind as like an open field. If our mind is filled with only our finite experience, we're going to have a really crappy day. Because it's very difficult to witness what happens in the world and how other people behave and not be personally affected. If you're part of the summit, you're a sensitive. You're somebody who has navigated this world because of some experiences that have happened to you. And you've probably tried not to be sensitive. And now, thank God, you're giving yourself permission to be exactly who you are. So the space of your mind is this amazing place where once you kind of work through your own homework, it becomes an open field. And that's where meditation comes in. That's why where once you can get to that clearing, and it won't always be clear, but it gets clearer, then you start realizing that's the place where the universe talks to you. And then once the universe starts talking to you, that's when your purpose starts making sense. That's when you start stepping into service, because what you have gone through becomes a story that you want to share with others because you want them to not have to work so hard or take as long as you did. So that to me is kind of like the hope of where we're heading in the world, is that we're getting to a place and a space where we can try not to share my screen. Oh, yes, there we go. Da, 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 da. Finite self in operation. Da, 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 da. So anyway, all of that. And so like once that made sense to me, like the finite self and the infinite self, I could forgive myself for having two different voices in my head. So totally normal for you to have two voices. It's just important to not let one or the other dictate, because you can't be like earthy, crunchy person walking through the world and floaty and all that stuff, because then you're not experiencing the human being. So it's just a balance.
And I would also say in my experience, it's like, it's a balance. And then there are also times where we get to delve in deeply and fully into one of the realms and then we come back.
Yeah.
Because there's, I see a lot of people in my work, and I'm sure you do too, who are really stuck in the physical plane and in the story and the pain of being here and a lot of the suffering. And then I see people who are also way out in the nebulous experience of full connected to everythingness, but forgetting to take care of this physical body. And there was something to be learned by both extremes. And then also, you know, I think there's huge wisdom to bring both those parts to the table to have that dialogue of, you know, what did you learn in your terrain?
Mm-hmm. And that's why I love that moving, yin-yang symbol, because, you know, no matter how high a high is, there can always be something of equal value that's kind of gurgling in the mud bricks that hasn't yet found the light of day. And I think just to give yourself the awareness and that forgiveness to know that it's not some arrival point that you get to in consciousness where everything is just groovy and nothing goes wrong. It's the ability to stay neutral when the rest of the world is in a tornado and you can just be that eye of the storm and be allowed to be witness to what else is happening and perhaps serve because you've cultivated that calm within yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So like your orchid just hanging out in the background going, I'm beautiful. Hello.
Oh, I love these orchids. I'm just in a parallel to the orchid, which is one of the orchids right next to it just dropped its, you know, flower, and it flowers once a year. And so this experience of, you know, there was a time before I moved to Hawaii when I didn't actually take good care of plants. I didn't know much about plants. And I've had orchids in the past where they dropped their flowers and I was like, oh, I guess you're done. Mm-hmm. Out in the trash barrel. And now I'm really aware of, oh my gosh, these orchids are, they'll bloom. And then they'll go into this place of taking the nutrients in and being quiet. And then they're going to bloom again. And some of them bloom for a really long time. And I think that there's some parallels also to the way we do our personal growth in that way.
Yeah.
There's not a bad, you know, my plant is not bad because it's dropped its flowers. It's actually in just a very real part of its cycle.
And so important for us that to embrace that within ourselves. Cause I think the comparison paralysis that people put themselves in when they're going through something and they compare it to where someone else is, we just do ourselves such a disservice by doing that. Because like you were saying, one's just dropped its flowers and yet that other one's still blooming, you know, and it just is, we're at exactly where we need to be. And there's a calm that comes from that. It's not easily arrived at. But once you can just kind of be at a place like, yep, this is where it is. And then you just have a freedom, no matter what the circumstances that's presenting itself.
I'm curious, because this is territory that I play in. Mm. I love this territory. Yes. So I will say, and I've said at times, you know, oh, we're all in the right place. Mm-hmm. We're all exactly where we need to be. And yet I also, and I think this is because of my perspective, I hold that there's a part of me that's aware when I'm stuck that I'm stuck. And mm-hmm. there's a difference between being stuck and not knowing it mm-hmm. and being stuck with what I think of as consciousness that I'm stuck. And it's almost like the bigger container that's sort of working around it to help it come to a point where it begins in the next season. Sort of like if my plants never flowered or never grew leaves, there would be, you know, it has an awareness within its cells that it's actually growing and changing. And mm-hmm. I wonder for you, in the way you perceive of what we're doing here, is there a consciousness in all of us that is aware that we're shifting and growing and that that's possible? Or is there
yes
a place for that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. There's so a place for that. And again, it's with the balance of the finite self and the infinite self. So the one that gets stuck is the finite self. That's the, you know, because the human being doesn't, we're our brain. And this really speaks to the brain, because the brain and the mind are different. The mind is a play space for our creativity. It's like a blank canvas that our soul will use to kind of project our ideas or to have our belief systems out to attract like experiences to it. So it's like this open, always think of it as an open field. Our human being is graced with this amazing brain, but the challenge with the brain is it always has to have an answer. It has to gather information. It has to
make something up.
Some kind of organization. So when we feel stuck, it's because we can't finish the loop. We can't get to that final state. The benefit of having one foot in the finite self and one foot in the infinite self is that the infinite self has the ability, which the finite self does not have, to be objective. Mm. So like as human beings, we can't really see ourselves. But when you become... When you have that ability to kind of almost shape shift and witness yourself, almost like if we were watching all the people touching the elephant, and then there was a part of us that could like float above it, have an out of body experience and kind of watch what was happening. It gives us much more perspective because we're not just seeing it from our singular perspective. We're seeing it from a global perspective or from a greater consciousness. So stuck to me is generally when we've actually changed, but we haven't realized that the software is updated yet. So we're still trying to like run our old systems and do all that stuff. And it's not working. And we're like, why isn't it working? And we know that we want to be someplace else, but we don't feel like we're there yet. But you wouldn't have that sense of stuck, meaning being pulled in two different directions, right? Because that's really what it is. It's like a push me, pull you. So I love stuck because it always is the optimism that something's in transition, but there's a resistance piece, which means that resistance, the tether, that's the part that's saying, don't forget this nugget, because if we can get that piece, then we won't have to do it again.
Yes. Yes. And I will second, I love stuck, but only when there's a part of my awareness aware that I'm stuck. Otherwise, stuck is a really hard place to be.
Yes. Stuck is maddening.
Yes. Yeah. Or painful or unconscious or disheartening or hopeless, right? There's a place where I think we can see that around us in our society where there's a lot of stuck that occurs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. There's a question I'm asking all of my speakers, and we're playing in that territory right now. So, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. It is the conversation. When the people who are listening, we're asking this question, how do I live my best life right now? And that's not, right? That's not about like, how do I get more money saved up for when I die or when I'm elderly or for my, you know, it's not about insurance. It's not about jobs. At least that's my experience. It might be for some people. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, in your work, what does it mean when you hear, how do I live my best life right now? What would you put on the table?
What I love is about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, my answer would have been completely different. With a tad of context to it, the last couple of years have been disruption years. We're shifting from one age to a 26,000 year long age of Aquarius. So we're moving from concrete material to this beautiful energy of air and movement and ideas and creativity. Even in the time period of our personal human experience in the last couple of years, we've had massive disruption. But this year is a lot more about just fluid and flow. So what I'm discovering is one of the elements that's evasive for people is what's valuable to you and when are you content? Because if what is valuable to you and being content is what you can bring into the present moment, you will be happy. Mm-hmm. And what's valuable to you should be very different than it was 5 years ago. And what makes you content really is simple. It can be taking your dog for a walk. It could be walking along the beach, right? It can be witnessing a sunset. It can be holding hands. It's contentment I think we should be chasing, not these futuristic ideas of success and financial gain and all those things. We'll have time for that. But if the present really is that gift, then I think finding what's valuable and what makes us content. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm just feeling that quiet gentleness as you're saying those words, right? It's actually... we're in a time, and I know as a solo entrepreneur that there's a lot of push in as being a business person, mm-hmm. at least as held by our society. And running an event like this, if you all can imagine, I've been interviewing these amazing people, and my practice has actually been, how can I be fully present? How can I actually really savor this experience talking with Austin today, right now, with a full day, mm-hmm. right? This is the question I'm asking all of you here right now too, with whatever you have going on today, how can we be content? How can we be content? And that doesn't mean settling for something that's terrible and saying you're content. Yeah.
But it's finding the value in the moment itself. And mediumship really helped me with that a lot, because I can't be anywhere else but present when I'm working as a medium. And for people who may not know what a medium does, a medium is a person who is between a living soul and a soul that's out of their body, you know, a finite self really and an infinite self, if you want to put it that way. And I'm the conduit of communication. I'm listening to the person in spirit who's really my client. And I'm trying to value what their experiences were and relay it to the person who's grieving the loss of this individual that's no longer physical. But I can't do that work if I'm not 100% present. I can't be distracted by my own nonsense. I can't be worried about something. I can't be ahead of myself or behind myself. I need to be here. And that has been an amazing gift.
I want to jump to something about you being a medium. So I'm going to just position, which is that there is a piece in your book here that I really love, where you're describing your first, like an early experience of being intuitive and it was as if I would momentarily become them, as in the person, the soul that is your client, and know what their life felt like. I would feel their disappointments and longings, as well as how their individual soul graced the world. Mm-hmm. And this is really different than how I've heard of mediumship in the past. And I've actually heard you also talk about, you know, this experience of feeling these different souls having a quality, for each one of the souls having a different quality. Mm-hmm. But I've heard of mediumship in the past, and I'm sure many of you as well have thought of it almost as like, you know, there's a walk-in, there's a spirit there. A person sits down with the spirit and they have a conversation. And what I love in your description is it actually has, it's going back to our perspective of being out larger and seeing the whole elephant. Mm-hmm. Is this experience of when you're working with someone, you're able to go into what their soul has experienced here. Can you speak a little bit about that experience, and also particularly what it's different to work with someone, you know, our different people who might have had very, very different kinds of lives, how that soul quality, I'm guessing, would be different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great question, Kari. Great question. It's almost like being wind. Being able to kind of flow into a different space and occupy it. Think of like the old Star Trek episodes where all of a sudden everything would materialize and the person would just be there. It's kind of the same thing. It's just like trying on a different suit and then inviting that space. Now, they are the wind, and I'm the reception. So when they blend with me, their memories and experiences overlay onto my nervous system, which is why my brain suddenly will see things, or I will smell things, or I will, because they're sharing their experience with me. They're, and it's so kind and so generous of them. No matter how heinous the individual was on the planet, the transition from physical to spiritual jettisons all of the finite self stuff, the ego, the all that stuff. And there becomes almost an immediate overview, like floating above the elephant. So they may have been a really stinky elephant. Bad analogy, but when it's like immediately when they pass, they're able to float above it, right? Out of body experience, because they're no longer the body and that experience, they're above it, and really have a different level of witnessing. And the most important thing is the accountability. And I think the reason why mediumship is hitting different tides of popularity and availability is because we need to be proven that the infinite self, that immortality is real, because we don't buy that for anything. We're like, no, everything dies, I'm going to die. But on their side, they witness, more or less floating above the elephant, they witness how much we suffer unnecessarily. So their one is also always for healing. So in any mediumship sitting, you'll always have two different conversations. You'll have the evidence for the finite part of us that's like, and then you'll have the infinite conversation for the healing and for the accountability, which a lot of times people don't get to in their lifetimes. But that shapes the people, but that shapes us.
Yeah.
You know, most sensitives really have had experiences where they might have been around someone who made them walk on eggshells. Mm-hmm. And that experience brings out an intuitive, because you have to constantly be tapping into the circumstance and into the environment and saying, am I safe? Are you okay? Because if you're okay, I'm cool. If you're not okay, man, I'm in big trouble. So it creates an intuitive. So then our idea is, well, if you're okay, then I'm okay. And then that creates a rescuer. And then eventually we have to figure out, we can't rescue, we have to nurture, right? Because rescuing is not healthy on any level. So it really sets up the soul for the trajectory of their life.
That's beautiful. And I would assume that when you're experiencing the vibration or quality or generosity of a soul allowing you to feel it, that has been like a meditator most of their life versus somebody who had maybe a hard physical labor for their life, that soul quality would actually feel really different for your system to experience.
Yes. Thank you for circling back to the second part of your question. That was very seamlessly done.
I'm curious about the feeling of that, because most of us in our lives get the experience of this particular soul in its work. And what really intrigues me is this experience that you're having of being able to feel these different qualities. And then I guess a third thing I'd say, and how does that impact your own soul's growth?
Yeah, well, I just feel like the luckiest fly on the wall, because I'm privy to these extraordinary conversations. And it's just made me realize that there's so much healing that's available, and that our version of the story isn't always right, because it's only our version. It's not the other person as well. And witnessing healing conversations with any sort of individual, from people that had no emotional intelligence to people that accomplished something but maybe interpersonally didn't succeed. I mean, there's so many different ways people are amazing. But I will say, in mediumship sittings, I have hardly ever had even famous people that I read for who will, well, you know, I had 7 cars and I did that. You know, nobody talks about that stuff once you're out of the physical body. It's all about human relationships. So I think my takeaway from this, you know, the years that I've been working as a medium and a shaman and all the other things, is the most important thing, back to, you know, how do you live your best life? Be in the moment of your life. That's where it's at, period. There's no other place it's going to happen. And it can be, and your life is not predetermined at all. Only unless you're bringing your little red wagon with all your stuff in it, that is the mumbo jumbo of what's happened before. And then you dump it on the person you're sitting with. And they can only be what you expect them to be. But each moment is an invitation to live your best life. I love the fact that you called the summit that, because we always have that availability. We always have the opportunity to be the best version of ourselves. It's nothing set. We're energy. Nothing.
And I will also say that this interview series started out being called Live Your Best Life Right Now. And I realized that command was actually not kind, that there was, that it lacked the invitation of like actually how do we, because it's a question that's in the moment rather than a set, something that's set.
Live your best life is just kind of like this seduction of like coming to the moment of your life, you know, like get here, be as present to this moment right now, because it's everything. Everything else is either a story or something that you're projecting, you know, or something that you have no idea that's going to happen, none of which you can really do much with.
I'm wondering for the beings, the consciousnesses that have passed, and when when they're with their stories, are their stories still changeable? Like, can consciousness evolution happen with somebody who's passed?
Yes. Absolutely. Think of it as, it's a quantum physics principle that is evading me right now, where two simultaneous beings have the same experience. It's not the string theory. It's 17 people are saying it out loud right now. So yes, thank you. Your all time is not one of the things that we are
funny. Are you thinking of the 100th monkey? Are you thinking of the 100th monkey?
No, I was the
slightly different thing, but yes.
Yeah, probably the same, just different
name. Same vibration.
Yes, you can absolutely change anytime, because we as human beings, for some reason, in a multidimensional universe, see time as a line. Past, present, future. There's no dimension to time, so we have to be wrong. Plus, quantitatively, it's in one of my chapters, we have no correct perception of time. That's why we have leap years, we have whatever, because we can't figure out a system that defines time. So we're wrong about time. Let's just be cool. And watches and all this stuff, that's what we've done to organize it, but it's still wrong. Like, it's wrong, but in the best way. So if you elicit a change, not only does that affect the future generations, but you're sending energy backwards so the stories can change there too. So if you believe in parallel universes, you know, that things, that there might be two of you working at the same time, you can have completely different outcomes, but we only seem to understand time going forward. Time goes backwards too. So you, that's the opportunity of you as a soul. Is that you? That's what Gandhi meant by, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. If you make it a difference, if you create a change generationally, ancestrally, individually, whatever, it has massive impact. But equally, if you choose not to change, if you choose to do, you know, an action that is not expansive, that also has repercussions. So that's the responsibility, the personal responsibility of our souls, is to, how do you wish to imprint this life? How do you wish to shine that God-given individualistic light into this world? Because only you can do it. And however you do it is all about the choices that you make. And honestly, right, wrong, I don't know about. I just think we have choices. And I just really get excited when people realize that they can make their own choices and how important the choices are that we make.
Yes, I believe that this place where we're having more, actually part of the vision behind the speaker series is allowing people to have more choices.
Yeah.
And what I experience, and you know, I've had an amazing life, but I'm really aware that what's come in front of me has been curated to some degree by my privilege, by where I've lived, by my economics, by my education. And at this point, by like what I watch on my computer then becomes more of what comes through on my computer. And we're all being curated information that builds on what we already know. And so where I get really excited is when something comes out from the side, which is something I didn't already know, right? So there's the, like, I know what I know. I don't want to know what I don't know. And yeah. Then there's this area of like, oh, I'm just starting to know something I don't know already. And that's part of, you know, my excitement with this conversation with you today. And also the invitation for all of these listeners to be with, oh, rather than just saying, I don't agree with that, or that's too weird, or that's way out there, what if we reached out part of our consciousness to say, I wonder if that's something I don't know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's, I think the invitation, circling back to your beautiful elephant analogy, is I think we've got to get comfortable floating above the elephant. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to get comfortable, because there's no way, and I normally don't speak in those kind of terms, world peace isn't some kind of euphoric idea. It is absolutely available. But the only way that we're going to arrive there is not by everybody agreeing with you. It's with you understanding, You don't have to agree with them, but just understanding, not just to be polite, but really just trying a moment to just see it from their perspective. That's it. So all people are asking for is an acknowledgement and an awareness that they have an opinion. Listen to people. It doesn't take any energy at all. Really just, you can still be talking in your head 70% and give them 30% of your attention. And I promise you, they won't know that 70% of you has left the room. But the kindness that you give to someone, just by giving them your full attention and just giving them space to be their distillation of God on this planet, even if it doesn't make any sense to you, doesn't matter. That would just make such a difference, wouldn't it? That and personal accountability, those two things, if we could just be patient and kind and be responsible, what a difference a day makes.
I'm imagining if you're capable of, you know, bringing other, experiencing other souls. Mm. I'm wondering, and what you're speaking right now, what if, you know, I don't want to say the more normal of us who maybe don't have all the same gifts that you do. We have different ones, of course, but yeah. This experience of, as you were speaking about, you know, giving somebody 30% of our attention, I was just feeling myself, what if I was to allow myself to experience the part of their soul I can experience?
Yeah.
Right.
And the reason why I broke it down like that was not to be miserly, but it's really hard to give people 100% of your attention.
It's actually unhealthy, I believe. Well,
yeah. And that's why I kind of said it in that kind of degree. And it's a great practice. It's a really great mindfulness practice, especially if you're with somebody that you totally disagree with and you just think that it's just like, oh, why am I here? To just be with them and breathe and just be present to yourself and listen. Mm. And then witness how much resistance you put when you are in a place that you don't want to be. So make it, you can still be present and listening and engaged. That's the 30%. But the 70% is you're in a classroom with yourself. Why am I resisting this? What is so difficult about me listening to this person's perspective? Why can't I hear what they're saying? Why am I so set in my own ideas that I can't be open to learning? Why am I choosing to not be a student right now? Why do I always have to be a teacher? You know, all of those things and those questions, when you really start allowing your own soul to be teaching you, much like I was talking about with the infinite self, that's life's happening to me, you know, that's the finite self. But if life's happening for me, this person who I might just never want to spend time with, you know, that I'm having this imaginary conversation with, what if they have like the biggest nugget of truth? And if I wasn't so about my own, I actually could pick up and learn something from them. Mm. Then you're really floating above the elephant.
Well, I think it's
not just about your own personal experience and what you're touching. Then you're allowing, you know, everything to be, and then you're in that spiritual consciousness. Then you're really in that deeper conversation with the world.
And it's a way of being in the, you know, we talked before about the risk of being in either just on the ground plane or up in the, you know, celestial plane. This is a way of being able to work it consciously.
Right. And Kari, what a great point, because I think when people think about spirituality or they think about God or they think about angels or ancestors, everything's up and away and, you know, this whole thing. It's a bit of our Judeo-Christian kind of upbringing. But the thing is that the shamanic cultures and what they really taught me when I was, you know, student, I'm always student to nature, for Lord's sake, how could you not be? But what their awareness was, no, God is everywhere. God's in, you know, the orchid behind you. It's in the space between you and I. It's in between the etheric space between all the people that are listening right now. So it's not an up and an out. It's an around and in and through and below and above. It's just this amazing envelopment of benevolence and love. Mm-hmm. If you are present to it, and then we come back to how do you live your best life? Just be.
Oh, This has been just an absolutely beautiful journey. Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, your life work. You've spent a life becoming the person that can have this conversation with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Kari. And thank you, my God, what a blessing for all the people that are listening to just be hovering above the elephant, listening to different perspectives and figuring out whose perspective of the elephant makes most best sense to them, you know, but what a gift that you are doing this with a full load of clients too, and that you're choosing to, you know, because how clearly and beautifully you're of service. So that's for the people listening, this gift that she's giving is a perfect example of what service looks like. When something is so important to you that you don't necessarily have to get paid for it, you don't necessarily have to have all those things because it's just important that it gets done. Mm. So may all of us aspire to be as generous.
Thank you, Austin.
Mm. Thank you.
Your words right now, I want to speak to like the vision of what I'm creating is it's really a gift, and it does come from a calling. It comes from the calling that there is so much that we don't understand. And if I could touch, if I could offer just a little bit more of the elephant to folks,
yeah,
I believe then we have more choices about how we live our lives consciously. And in that place of greater consciousness, right?
Yeah.
In that place, more is possible.
Yeah. Everything's possible. It's unlimited. It's the quantum field of everything.
Incredible experience being here. And that's not to dismiss that we have hard days and there are hard things happening on the planet. Yeah. I can be dismissive of that. I'm actually trying to hold a bigger perspective while acknowledging there is a lot that's occurring, and how can we expand ourselves to hold even more?
Yeah, agreed.
Oof. Austin has an really generous meditation for us. Thank you, Austin. I appreciate that. So that's going to be in the gift link below this conversation today. And there's two other pieces I want to mention. One, as I mentioned it in the bio, but you're going to be teaching at Omega Institute, which is one of my favorite places. So that's coming this upcoming summer. At what time?
June 23rd through the 25th.
Great. So
I cannot wait. Omega is this, if you don't know about it, Omega is this groovy, holistic campus in the middle of upstate New York, surrounded by trees with a lake, and the most amazing speakers and people go there. I've been there as a student before, and it's such an honor to go as a mentor. I'm really excited about that.
Congratulations. That is a real honor. And to speak to that place as a whole, just invitation for people to check out the Omega Institute. It's an incredible place where people are doing similar to what we're exploring here, which is how do we think differently, expand consciousness.
Just a kudos to Omega. They also are one of the few institutions that has water reclamation. They take all the water that is produced there and reclaim it to drinking water. And it's all done through brooks and different, you know, digressions. It's amazing. So Omega is a phenomenal, and I'm going to be with one of my really dear friends, who's another medium, whose name is Suzanne Northrup. And we're going to be teaching connecting to the universe, kind of what we're talking about. So it's for anybody who'd be interested in partaking. It's going to be super fun.
Beautiful. And the other thing is, I'm going to say is a year from now, this got me really excited. So just as an image, because I love sort of like future pacing in our consciousnesses. And a year from now, you're going to be with the pyramids in Egypt on just right around right now, which is the solstice, which right now is the 20th.
And spring equinox, we're going to be between the claws of the Sphinx, which Edgar Cayce, who was an amazing American prophet, he believed that was the entrance of the Akashic Records. So we're going to go up the Nile, and it's going to be unbelievable. The trip is just, I mean, I'm still like, what? You know, so it's going to be super fun. It'll be super fun. So
to find more about you, your website is Austin Wells, and that's AustinWells.com. Great.
Yes. Correct.
And I take this time at the end of these interviews to see where what our speakers are doing, because for a couple of reasons. One is I want you all to be able to expand what you're doing in your lives, but also because I think it's great inspiration, yeah. Right? This is inspiration. So when I heard this image of the you know, being at the Sphinx, and I just my system awakening in this place of like, oh yes, the world is so much bigger. Mm-hmm. The world is so much bigger. Our consciousness is so much bigger. There's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
And how do we keep staying curious and awake and alive and engaged
mm-hmm.
on this journey?
The beautiful thing about being more conscious, spiritually conscious, is I find I don't have to worry about it. Things just start happening. And it's that feeling in your life when everything suddenly has the right rhythm and you just feel like you're at the right place. You're always at the right place. It's just sometimes your soul senses no, because you're open and you're actually present. That's when you have those curated experiences where it feels like you're in the right place. But rest assured, you're always exactly where you need to be. So relax. Because if you know that, then you can just be present no matter what is going on. Just be intrigued. Okay, I'm here. I wonder what I'm learning. I wonder what I can share. Super simple.
Austin, thank you very, very much for being here today.
What a pleasure.
All of the audience, thank you for being here in this container in which we're asking bigger questions, for being curious about ourselves and our lives and consciousness. And I know that it takes a certain kind of being to be here listening and to be setting aside any of what might be a stopping place or in our own thoughts, and being able to be in this place of curiosity. So I'm just thanking all of you for being here on Wild and Awake. Aloha. Aloha.